We're picking up where we left off last week in John chapter 6. Jesus began his bread of life discourse, where he claimed to be the bread of life from heaven. He is the true everlasting bread sent from the Father. The crowd had been seeking Jesus for his signs and wonders, for the material gifts that he could give them. Remember, Jesus was speaking to the same crowd that he multiplied bread and fish for in the feeding of the 5,000. But this crowd, this group of people, needed to learn that Jesus himself is the gift. Jesus is not a means to an end. He is the end. He is the purpose. They should have been seeking Jesus for Jesus and not for any selfish ambition. Beginning in verse 35, Jesus said, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst." Notice that coming to Jesus and believing in Jesus are paralleled. Come to me and never hunger. Believe in me and never thirst. The terms are describing the same idea. Coming to Jesus means believing in Jesus. Coming to Jesus means believing in Jesus. Likewise, believing in Jesus means you have come to Jesus. But the crowd apparently was not believing in Jesus in the right way. They had not come to Jesus in the right way. Verse 36, he says, "You have seen me and yet do not believe." You have seen me and yet do not believe. And that's interesting because just a few verses earlier, the crowd said, "Lord, give us this bread always." That was a good response, but they were missing the point. Perhaps they were still thinking in terms of physical bread rather than Jesus being the bread. Verse 37, "All that the Father gives me will come to me, and the one who comes to me I will by no means cast out. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." Jesus affirmed that people would come to him. People would believe in him, whether the crowd would believe in him or not. And Jesus wasn't desperate for followers, okay? He knew he would have followers, and he was secure in that. He knew that some people would reject him, but he was content with that. Why? Because he came from heaven to do the Father's will, not his own will. Those who come to Jesus are the ones that the Father gives him. And this places the initiation of belief, the initiation of salvation on God. Not on man's choice, but God's choice. In theology, this is what we call monergism, which means one work. The work of drawing someone to Christ is the work of God alone. Man cannot come to Christ by his own ability or by his own power. God must draw him. This is what Calvinists and Lutherans have historically believed about salvation. And Jesus makes it explicit down in verse 44. "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him." No one can come to me unless the Father draws him. If you have come to Jesus, if you believe in him, then it was the Father who drew you. Apart from God, we wouldn't want to choose Christ. We wouldn't want salvation. He has to draw us. And it's a work of mercy for him to do so. He didn't have to do that for us. He could have left us in our misery, and he would have been totally just in doing so. The comfort is that he does have compassion. He does have mercy. He draws us to Christ even though we don't deserve it. And Christ receives all who come to him in faith. Verse 39. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Back in chapter 3, Jesus told Nicodemus that he must be lifted up for everyone to see. And those who look upon him in faith will not perish, but have everlasting life. Likewise here, everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life. Jesus gets more specific about this everlasting life by connecting it to resurrection. He who believes in me, I will raise up on the last day. The Father draws you, Jesus receives you, and in the end, Jesus resurrects you. You will be resurrected to a glorified body just like Jesus has now. You will be fully restored to a humanity free from sin and death. Now, I want to clarify something about verse 39. Jesus says he will lose no one that the Father gives him, and he will raise them up on the last day. That sounds pretty absolute, doesn't it? It could be taken to mean that anyone who ever comes to Jesus at any point in their life will always, no matter what, be saved in the end. No matter what goes on in your heart, no matter how you live your life, you will always remain saved. That's an extreme version of what some people call once saved, always saved. But we need to understand what Jesus means here. He has already established that coming to him means to believe in him. When Jesus says, "I will not lose any who come to me," he means, "I will not lose any who believe in me." He didn't say, "I'll raise up those who used to believe in me at some point in the past." No, the implication is that these people will keep believing. They will keep coming to Jesus over the course of their life. Those are the ones that Jesus will not lose and the ones that he will raise on the last day. There are others who are drawn to Christ and who believe for a while, but sadly, they fall away. We see this in just a few chapters in John 15. Jesus says, "He is the vine, and we are the branches, but unfruitful branches are cut out by the Father." They were in Jesus, put there by the Father, monergism, but the Father removed them from Jesus. In John 6, Jesus is talking about those who persevere in the faith, those elected to eternal salvation. The slogan we prefer in the Reformed tradition is perseverance of the saints. Perseverance of the saints. Perseverance implies growth in sanctification, growth in holiness. That's why it's the perseverance of the saints, the holy ones, the sanctified ones, the called out ones. Once saved, always saved tends to obscure that. Jesus' recurring message throughout John is abide in me, remain in me, bear fruit in me. That means you must have a present and active faith in Christ. This is why Paul tells us to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. This is why he told the Roman church to not be arrogant about their salvation, but to fear being removed. And we need to have that godly fear as well. Well, now in verse 41, we see how the crowd reacted to Jesus' claims. The Jews then complained about him because he said, "I am the bread which came down from heaven." And they said, "Is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he says, 'I have come down from heaven'?" It says they complained about him, or grumbled, as some translations say, because he said he was the bread of life from heaven. Think back with me to the Exodus story. When God saved Israel out of Egypt and into the wilderness, what did the Israelites do? What were they known for doing quite a lot? Grumbling. They grumbled. They grumbled against Moses. They grumbled over the food. And what were the Jews doing to Jesus in John 6? Grumbling. They were grumbling over the true food. They were grumbling over the everlasting bread. They were acting just like their unbelieving, disobedient fathers. We see here that the wilderness sins were being repeated in the first century. And that shows you just how far Israel had strayed from Yahweh. But the Jews understood that Jesus was claiming to be from heaven. That's what offended them so greatly. How can he be from heaven? Don't we know his father and mother? How can he say he came down from heaven? Jesus had been talking about God as his father. But the Jews said, no, we know who your father is. Your father is Joseph. But Jesus doubled down. He said, do not murmur among yourselves. Then verse 45, it is written in the prophets, and they shall all be taught by God, which is a quote from Isaiah 54. Therefore, everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me. Not that anyone has seen the Father, except he who is from God, he has seen the Father. Jesus reinforced that he was from God and that God was his Father. Those who learn from the Father come to me, and no one has seen the Father except he who is from God, meaning himself. Jesus made it abundantly clear that he was claiming pre-existence. Jesus was claiming pre-existence. He didn't begin existing in the womb of his mother, as other humans do. No. He existed before that from all eternity. He has seen the Father because he is from God and he came from heaven. Verse 47. Most assuredly I say to you, he who believes in me has everlasting life. I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I shall give for the life of the world. Jesus said, the manna didn't keep your fathers alive. They're dead. You wanted manna? The manna won't keep you alive. I will keep you alive. I am the living bread, and if you eat this bread, you will live forever. The manna didn't give the Israelites everlasting life. They died and they are still dead. The manna was miraculous, but it wasn't everlasting. It was temporary. But Jesus' bread will be given for the life of the world. One of the most shocking claims is in verse 51. Jesus said, the bread that I shall give is my flesh. Next week, we'll see just how shocking that statement was to his audience. It was probably more shocking than claiming to be from God. But we know that Jesus was foreshadowing the cross. His flesh would be offered up as a sacrifice for all humanity. His flesh was sacrificed, and then his flesh was resurrected. Sacrifice to resurrection. And it is only through his everlasting flesh that we can have everlasting life. We read from 1 Kings 19 earlier, where Elijah received miracle bread from God. Elijah was grieved over his situation. He wanted to die, rather than to continue his ministry as a prophet. So he lied down to die. But the angel of Yahweh came to him and said, "Arise and eat." Elijah was strengthened by miracle bread and miracle water. He experienced what we might call a symbolic resurrection. He laid down to die, but he rose again. We have the full version of that in Christ. That's what we will have on the last day. And we experience it in part even now. Jesus gives life to you through his teachings, through his word, through his work on your behalf, and through the eating and drinking of the Lord's Supper. These are the ways in which he gives us his life, his flesh. So the message for you today is, come to Jesus and believe in Jesus. Not just one time, but every time. It is a daily commitment that has to be intentional. Every day, keep coming to Jesus. Keep believing in Jesus. Don't take him for granted. Don't grumble against him. How do you grumble against Jesus? You grumble against him whenever you fret having to come to worship. You grumble anytime you treat his word or his table or prayer as a chore. You grumble whenever you treat righteous living and avoiding sin as burdens to you. That's being like Israel. That's wanting Egypt more than Jesus. But you are not a slave to your sin. You have been set free from Egypt. You have been released from that bondage. Psalm 34 says, "Taste and see that Yahweh is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him." Is your refuge in Jesus? Are you looking to him and relying on him? Your salvation is not secure just because you believed at one time in the past. It's not secure if Jesus was your refuge at one time in your past. That's not how it works. It's not one and done. It is a continual relationship that you must persevere in. Your salvation is secure when Jesus remains your refuge. When you keep believing upon him, when you keep seeing the Son lifted up on the cross, and when you keep responding with faith, that is when your salvation is secure. That is when you have assurance. And if you remain in him, you can have assurance that you will live forever. Trust in his promises. He will by no means cast you out. And he will raise you up on the last day.